Joseph, pages 93 to 98, somewhere on the Atlantic Ocean, 1939, 10 days from home. Joseph followed the small group of kids through the raised doorway onto the bridge of the St. Louis. The bridge was a narrow, curving room that stretched from one side of the ship to the other. Bright sunlight streamed in through two dozen windows, offering a panoramic view of the vast blue-green Atlantic and wispy white clouds. Throughout the wood-checked room were metal benches with maps and rulers on them, and the walls were dotted with mysterious gauges and meters made of shining brass. There were a number of crewmen on the bridge. Some of them were wearing blue and white sailor uniforms, like the stewards, and three more were in brass-buttoned blue jackets with gold bands at the cuffs and blue officers' caps with gold trim. One of the regular sailors stood at a spoke steering wheel the size of a truck tire, with handles sticking out all around it. It looked like the steering wheels Joseph had seen in paintings of pirate ships, but this one was metal and connected to a big rectangular pedestal. The shortest of the three men, in fancy uniform, strode over to the group with a big smile on his face. Joseph recognized him from the Chabot service. "Welcome to the bridge, boys and girls," he said. "I'm Captain Schroeder." The captain shook each of their hands, even though none of them was older than 13. One of the parents on board the ship had arranged for a tour of the bridge and the engine room for any children who wanted to attend, and eight of them had signed up. Ruthie and Evelyn hadn't been interested, but Renetta was there, along with a few of the older kids. Captain Schroeder introduced them to the first officer and the other crew on the bridge, and showed them what some of the gauges and dials meant. Joseph listened eagerly. "This is the engine control for the St. Louis," Captain Schroeder explained. "When we want to change speed, we grip these handles, slide them all the way forward, and then pull back to a new setting." He smiled. "I'm not going to change the speed now, because we've got the engines set right where we want them." Joseph noticed both handles were set to full ahead. "We're going full speed, because we're racing two other ships to Cuba," Joseph asked. The captain looked surprised, and then a little angry. "Where did you hear we were racing other ships to Cuba?" he asked Joseph. "Two stewards were talking about it the other day," Joseph said, feeling a little nervous. "They said if we don't make it there first, they might not let us in." The captain pursed his lips and glanced meaningfully at his first officer, who looked concerned. The captain turned on his smile again. "We're not in any kind of race," he said, looking from Joseph to the other kids. "We're just making best possible speed because we have calm seas and a following wind. You've nothing to worry about. Now perhaps Petty Officer Jockel will show you the engine room." As high up as the bridge on the ship, the engine room was just as far down. After stepping through a steel fire door that had "crew only" painted on it in big letters, Joseph and the tour group went down the staircase after staircase, and they weren't going to the engine room yet. Below decks was very different from what Joseph was used to above decks. Where everything on A, B, and C decks was airy and comfortable, there were no portholes here, no spacious cabins. The air was damp and smelled of cigarette and cabbage and sweat. Peeking into the rooms, Joseph could see the crew quarters below the decks and two beds to a room, barely enough space to turn around. The hallways were narrow and the ceilings were low. Petty Officer Jockel had to duck as they went through the doorways. Joseph had never been afraid of tight places before, but the close living conditions made him uneasy. He felt like he was visiting an alien world. The seven other kids must have felt the same way, because they were all silent, even Renata. From down the hall came the sound of men singing, and Petty Officer Jockel slowed. As they got closer, Joseph recognized the tune. It was the Horst Wessel song, the anthem of the Nazi party. Joseph's skin crawled, and he and the other kids looked at each other nervously. Joseph had heard the Horst Wessel song hundreds of times in the following weeks after his father's abduction. It had gone overnight from an obscure song to the Nazis sang at rallies to the unofficial national anthem of Germany, and it was frightening. The last time Joseph had heard the song was the day after one of his neighbors had lined the street to salute as Nazi soldiers marched by. Petty Officer Jockel tried to slip the children past the little common room where the crewmen were drinking and singing, but suddenly someone in the room called out, "Stop! Passengers aren't allowed down here." Jockel froze, and so did Joseph. One of the men got up from the table, a scowl on his face. He was the thickest man, with a bulbous nose, bulldog cheeks, and dark, heavy eyebrows. Joseph knew that face from somewhere. Had he been the steward at dinner? Set up their beds one night? No, Joseph remembered. This was the man he had seen on the balcony in the morning of the Chabot service. The man who'd been angry at the portrait of Hitler had been taken down and removed. The man struggled a little, bumping into things as he tried to move through the tight little room. Joseph had seen drunk people leaving pubs in Berlin the same way. "The captain has given these children special permission to visit the engine room, Schlendick," Petty Officer Jockel told him. "The captain," Schlendick said, his voice dripping with disapproval. Even from where Joseph stood, he could smell the alcohol in his breath. "Yes," Jockel said, straightening. "The captain." On the wall of the common room, Joseph saw a bulletin board with Nazi slogans and headlines from the rabidly anti-Jewish newspaper, Der Stern, pinned into it, and he felt a shiver of fear. "Jewish rats," Schlingnick said, sneering at Joseph and the other kids. Many of them looked at their shoes, and even Joseph looked away, trying not to draw the big man's attention. Joseph clenched his fists, and his ears burned hot with frustration and embarrassment at his helplessness. After a few tense moments, Schlindick staggered back and forth to his seat, the threat of the captain's rank still worth something, even so far from the bridge. Petty Officer Jockel hurried the children along, and Schlindick and his friends broke into another Nazi song, even louder than before. Joseph heard them sing, "When Jewish blood flows from the knife, things will go much better," before Jockel ushered them down another flight of stairs. Joseph's legs felt weak, and he clung to the railing. He thought they had escaped all of this on the St. Louis, but the hatred had followed him even here, to the middle of the ocean. With its huge diesel engines and generators and dials and pumps and switches, the engine room could have been fascinating, but Joseph had a hard time getting excited about it. None of the other children were excited either, not after what happened with Schlindick. The tour had ended solemnly, and Petty Officer Jockel returned them to the surface, being careful to take them back a different route. It was a different world below decks, Joseph thought, a world outside the magic little bubble he and the other Jews lived above the decks on the MS St. Louis. Here, below the decks, the world was real.